Cataclysm.
Years have caused confusion.
I'll crash its board.
Well, hello everyone. Frankly, it's a miracle I found time to stream, but joy of joys, AAA has gone to a Halloween party and she's going to go and see some fireworks tonight. And she had a party, she had triple party today for AAA, which means a much needed reprieve because it's been half term here and various extenuating circumstances basically mean that. I've been on daddy duty for most of the week. My absolute highlight, I suppose, was playing Super Princess Peach on the Switch, where, I don't know, she's pretty good, but she can't do the bosses. So she gives me the controller to, you know, can you do the bosses, please? And obviously I can do them with consummate skill and ease, as somebody forged in the steel of the 1980s. While I'm doing the boss, she goes, "Daddy, Daddy," like that, "Go, go," like that. When I finished one of the bosses, she turned to me and she said, "You're so cool, Daddy." Now, I know she's only 4 years old, about to turn five, but I have to take those things because I'm well aware that in years to come, she won't be calling me cool. She'll be embarrassed by my very existence. So have to take those things when you come. I've been a little bit like Bruce Willis in Die Hard this week, on all of those sorts of things. And let me tell you, finding a week of stuff to do to fill the time for a little one like that is no small task. Very much Bruce Willis in Die Hard territory. But anyway, we are gathered here. So I wasn't able to do office hours. I wasn't able to do Deepest Lore. And then on top of that, next week, there's the American election on Tuesday. And I am booked in to go on the old Lotus Munchers. So I'll be driving to Swindon. So there'll be no Tuesday office hours. And given that it's all night and I'll be driving back on the Wednesday, there'll be no Deepest Lore next week either. I hate disruption, friends. I hate it when I've got BAU, business as usual, steady routine, you know, evenly rotating economy. You reach that panacea, you hit it, and you're rocking and rolling for a couple of weeks, rocking and rolling, and then something, you know, half term, some event, holiday, some bullshit, you know, knocks you off. Drives me crazy. It happened with the British election. Do you remember? We were rocking and rolling. Then the British election came, and then was holidays. Then I had to go away. Oh. And then just as I'd done the revamp and I got back, we were rocking and rolling. And then all this bullshit comes up. I can't stand it. I like BAU. I like back to school. I like 9 to 5. I like the normal run of things. Not all this disruption. Who's with me? I would like people to vote if you're on. BAU, say BAU, or if you're one of those scallywags who likes, you know, holiday time. Click that. But I prefer business as usual, personally. Also, I'm trying out a new feature that YouTube are doing, which is I got this message saying, "Oh, try this new goal thing. If 10 people send super chats, you can set little goals." And I thought I'd use this honestly. So sometimes I have ideas for videos that I'm in two minds about. For example, recently, certain Mexican fellow, Fuentes, started having a go at Lord of the Rings and specifically Hobbits. even left a tweet saying, you know, F the Hobbits. Now, I don't know if he's just attention seeking or what, but, you know, I've been doing these videos where I've been doing little, I wouldn't say hits, but I've been using figures like Constantin Kissin, Francis Foster, James Lindsay, Tim Pool last week or 2 weeks ago. And I've been, you know, kind of using these as hooks to teach little, you know, little teachable moments, as they say. And I was thinking about doing one on why Fuentes is so wrong on this. But I'm also kind of interested in, there's actually a little bit of substance behind what he's saying as well, because if you listen to the longer clip, he's saying that actually, like Game of Thrones with its realpolitik and so on, is kind of more interesting or something. And I think that that is a conversation worth having. I got it in the back of my mind that me and Morgoth would have a good conversation about that. But I mean, I'm always caught because there's the heroic kind of idealism of Tolkien, but then there's the kind of hard Machiavellian realpolitik world of Game of Thrones, where in a way there were no higher ideals, there were no higher purposes in Game of Thrones, just raw power all the time. So for obvious reasons, that interests me. I mean, I've often thought that my various arguments with Aaron McIntyre and various other people about power and ideology, I kind of adopt the Cersei Lannister part, you know, when Littlefinger gives all that whole spiel, knowledge is power, and then she just gets, you know, she just gets the mountain to arrest him, or she just gets the guards to arrest him and says, power is power. And I've been thinking that about that a great deal recently, because as time goes on, I increasingly think that Cersei Lannister has a point, that power is power. Certainly, certain country in the Middle East has been proving in real time that power is power, and that ideology can basically go to hell when push comes to shove. And they've been doing that, in, you know, in broad daylight and getting away with it too. So anyway, there is all of that. All right, so yeah, 71% are on the BAU versus the holiday time. Excellent, excellent. All right, so what are we going to talk about today before I hit the super thanks and all the super chats and so on? And that is going to be the election of Kenny Badenoch to be the new Tory leader. Now, as some people who follow this channel will know, I made a couple of videos standing for Kemi. I wanted Kemi to be the Tory leader. And that is because, in my view, Kemi becoming the Tory leader is the next step on the zero seats journey. You know, zero seats was never going to be a one election deal. We needed to double tap. You can't keep T1000 down. It's going to keep on reforming. Do you remember all of that? And I basically have an idea. I've made a bet that Kemi Badenoch becoming the leader of the Tories will form part of the double tap. In my conception, the public at large, rather than the Tory membership, don't forget the Tory membership is only just above like 120,000 people. And some of them are clearly out of their tree and are not connected to reality whatsoever. But I have an idea that in the country at large, a lot of people will quietly not vote for Kemi Badenoch. And basically, my reason for believing that is that it comes down to what I call the lizard brain, right? What is it that Laurence Olivier said in Sleuth? You're not one of me, right? And I think that even doesn't matter what people say out loud or what their stated kind of ideals and beliefs are, when push comes to shove, I feel like people will kind of make any excuse not to vote for Kemi Badenoch on basically racist grounds. This is my belief. And I really wanted that to be tested by reality. It's something I talked about with various other people. Now, there are various other people in our milieu, let's just say, who had a different idea. They had the idea that Robert Jendrick should have become the Tory leader, basically to push, to force Nigel Farage to become more based, right? And to push the quote-unquote discourse or the Overton window more in our sort of direction with his base talk, right? And that this would create a scenario where there would be a lot of right-wing momentum in the system, okay? Only one flaw in that plan, lads. You're talking about the Tories, right? You're talking about a bunch of rattlesnakes. You're talking about people who don't have any principles or beliefs. Robert Jendrick, I mean, if Robert Jendrick had an ounce of genuine passion, belief, if he really in his heart of hearts believed the stuff he was saying in the past couple of weeks, right? As soon as Kemi Badenoch was announced, he would have announced that he is leaving the Tory party with immediate effect, taking all of his supporters with him. They're going to join Reform, and boom, Reform double the number of their MPs or triple the number of their MPs. That would make a statement. That would make a ripple through British politics. That would say, actually, this way of doing things is over, because me, Robert Jendrick, I love my country and I really can't let this happen. So the Tory party have proven their left wing. Bugger the Tory party. I'm joining Reform. I'm going to make a statement. Did Robert Jendrick do that? Of course he bloody didn't. And I fully expect him to take up a position in Kemi Badenoch's shadow cabinet. Because just like every other Tory scum, he is a spineless and snivelling and wormy careerist. Right? If you're listening, Robert Jendrick, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong by actually doing something in British politics. Actually make a statement. Lead the splinter group out of the Tory party. Make waves. That would be something happening. This is nothing happening, really. Other than, in my view, as I said, signing the ultimate death knell of the Tory party. If you want to see my immediate reaction when I found out that Badenoch had won, I posted this on Twitter earlier on. There's my little Jose Mourinho meme, look. A beautiful celebration from Jose. And I'll share some more stuff in a second. But their basic argument was the best thing from our point of view would be for Jendrick to become the leader, and this would force Reform to be based, right? My view is, fuck all that. The ultimate mission is to destroy the Tory party, no matter what. You're not going to get anything you want from any of these people. They're all a bunch of untrustworthy careerists. And the more base thing to do would be to put Kemi in and make a bet that this would turn off vast swathes of the British public. Now, bear in mind that Keir Starmer, even before the budget went in last week, was on minus 38% approval rating. His net approval is minus 38% after 3 months of being the Prime Minister, which is historically bad, okay? It took Tony Blair about 7 or 8 years to get to that point. Starmer's done it in record time. He is absolutely hated by every section of society. His budget has just fucked over the farmers and small business owners and normal working people. He lied about the Southport stuff. I did a Substack article about that in the middle of the week, which you should read. It couldn't be worse, basically, Labour, right? They have completely screwed the pooch and shown that they're unfit for office. And the Tories, up against this backdrop, have decided, basically, as far as I can see, to double down on being the most progressive, pathetic, wet party imaginable under Kemi Badenoch. Okay, there was clearly a more based option, the Gendric, the containment option, actually. That would have been the thing that would have revived T-1000. Because if Kendrick kept that up and went into election like that, you know, you would have had a lot of the country behind him. That didn't happen. Sorry, Connor. They went for Kemi. Maybe some of them were listening to old Wiley AA, and they went for Kemi. And I have the bet, basically, that that's going to be it for the Tories. So Nigel Farage, as I see it, is standing in front of a wide open goal for Nigel. Is he going to be able to grasp the mantle? Is he going to be able to step up? And part of the problem is that many people, many of these people I'm talking about, who wanted Gendric, they're basically disillusioned with reform. They're basically like, listen, it's not going to happen with reform because they're just as bad as the Tories. They're just wet, etc. I almost don't really care about their stated policies. What I care about is breaking the back of the Tories, right? Even if it's reform in a kind of wet mode, it would still be better than it being the Tories, because psychologically, the stranglehold of the two-party system would have been broken, okay? And there's a lot more that can be done with Farage that can be done with the Tory party. You understand what I'm saying? Farage, for example, represents other possibilities. He is hooked into the Trump network. If Trump becomes the president in America, Nigel is his mate, okay? And it just creates new possibilities, okay? It doesn't have, reform does not have all of the robust controls of the Tory party around it, okay? Yes, they've cucked on lots of things. Yes, we know about Hope Not Hate, etc. There's still opportunity there in and around reform, where I see no opportunity in and around the Tory party at all. You know, and I still don't really understand the mindset of, you know, people who watch this channel, or people in and around our circles or adjacent to our circles, who believe that the Tory party can be used as a vehicle for anything. It can't be. The Tory party is a vehicle for one thing and one thing only, the destruction of this country. It is committed, basically, to progressive ideals. It is a left-wing party. And already I've seen today numerous people saying like they've been lifelong Tory members, and today they're going to be leaving because the Tory party have proven once and for all that they are not serious about anything conservative whatsoever. Okay. This is ultimately what Kemi Badenoch represents. Now, some people watching this could be like, well, this is a bit sly, eh? What about all the base things that Kemi Badenoch has said? You know, she's not for identity politics, and she's not for the trans agenda, blah, blah, blah. Listen, I've seen enough Kemi Badenoch to know where her bread is buttered, okay? She is not based or anything, okay? She's just one of them. And by one of them, I mean one of the permanent ruling class, the anywhere people who don't give a shit about this country, okay? And when we're going to go onto Twitter in a second to have a look at some of the reactions, we'll see exactly what I'm saying, okay? So let me have a look at this. I mean, just before I get onto Twitter, the one other hidden and interesting element of this outcome is that in my analysis of things, there are two rival factions within the regime that I keep on talking about. The globalists or the techno-globalists, the WEF lot, right, on the one hand, and the Zionists on the other hand, okay? And if you've been following my coverage of the American elections, the Zionists are behind Trump, okay? The Trump network, the Chris Rufo network, trigonometry, all of these jokers I've been covering Jordan Peterson, Daily Wire, all of them, Blaze, they're all part of the Zionist network, okay? Tommy Robinson, they're Zionists. Pretty hardcore, some of them, okay? And they have this basic view of, I mean, their basic agenda is, listen, we need more support for Israel. We need some more support for, you know, the army in general. We need to get some competence back into the system. All of the putting the woke away stuff that I've talked about. This is basically their agenda, okay? And if you watch my Chris Rufo video, I went through some of it there, right? Because Chris Rufo basically outlines exactly what it is they want to do. It's the same thing that Elon Musk has talked about. It's the same thing that Vivek Ramaswamy has talked about, okay? And I think Robert Jendrick is basically aligned with that faction. I also think that there are several other people within the Tory party who are Zionist aligned in that way, okay? If I had to think about individuals off the top of my head, I would say Braverman, Patel possibly as well. Remember Patel with her, do you remember she had to step down once because she was clandestinely meeting people in Israel? Jendrick, and there's a few others as well within the Tory party who are Zionist aligned. But the British system, unlike the American system, is not under Zionist lockdown as far as I can tell. It seems to me that the globalists have a lot more robust defense mechanisms here to keep the Zionists out. Possibly one of the reasons why old Tommy Robinson has gone back to jail, because there's no protections here. And I've noticed that they play pretty hard, those globalists. They have basically ensured that Kemi Badenoch has become the leader here, because Badenoch is the globalist choice. Jendrick was the Zionist choice. Now, people who have inner party knowledge of the Tory party may disagree with this analysis, and you're free to do that. But if you do disagree, lay out your reasons, okay? And paying lip service to Israel is not enough, really, okay? Because all globalists pay lip service to Israel. All of them do. Biden and Harris, right, play lip service. But clearly, in the overall scheme of things, they are globalist aligned, okay? Harris and Biden, not Zionist aligned. And I would say that in the overall scheme of things, Badenoch is closer to the WEF lot than she is to the Zionist lot. Okay. That's just my reading of things. And I just find it kind of interesting how the globalists are able to keep out the Zionists in Britain. They've got a very strong game here. Keir Starmer is globalist aligned as well, clearly, despite his wife and, you know, his lip service to Israel, etc. You can always tell if they're real on that Zionist side of things. And Starmer isn't. He's another globalist, okay? So, let's have a look at some of the tweets that have been going out, because you have to see some of these to believe them, you know. Declan Ganley. Kemi Badenoch has just been announced as the new leader of the UK Conservative Party, showing that Conservatives are quite often the most effective agents of practically breaking barriers. The first black woman leader of any Western democracy's top political parties, and of course, a potential future Prime Minister of the UK. The party that broke the barriers when they picked their first woman leader and subsequently PM has now made another bold move. Have to give them credit. Plus, of course, congratulations to Mrs. Badenoch. Well, 4-1. Great, Declan. And I just said, so powerful. Breaking glass ceilings, truly the party of progressive change. And you see, what I'm banking on is, what I'm banking on really is the public seeing all this bullshit as well, or the Tories coming out and doing more and more of this, because they're just so fucking stupid that they just don't see that this sort of talk, you know, actually annoys people. Yeah, to me, it's wonderful to see this. It's like witnessing a death spiral. Now, I should mention that those other people, like Connor and a few other people who are on the Jendrick side of this, they see things differently. They think that my stuff about the lizard brain and about the kind of covert racism of most normal people is not true, and that the public at large actually won't care about voting for a black lady in 2024. So they think that the public at large are more progressive than what I think. And that may be the case, but I want to see the natural experiment. I want to see that hypothesis tested. Rishi Sunak, if you looked in the last election, performed dismally against a very uncharismatic and bad Labour candidate in Keir Starmer. I believe that Rishi Sunak performed as badly as he did, partly, not totally because of, but partly because of his background and his race. I believe that Kamala Harris will lose a lot of voters who would have voted for Joe Biden last time. She'll lose a lot of those people because of her background, basically. A lot of people will quietly not go for that. Stated preference versus revealed preference. I think revealed preference will quietly win the day here, okay? They think that actually, no, people are too far gone. Maybe, but let's see. You see, I like these little bets because they're all like natural experiments, and it's kind of interesting to figure out the true lay of the land. And we've not actually had a situation like this before, because by all rights, the Tories should win the next election because Labour are that bad, right? It should be a Tory landslide. But I think that Kemi Badenoch, because of this factor I'm talking about, will turn off a lot of people. And not only will she turn off, you know, the native British population, there'll be other groups here, other large ethnic groups that won't necessarily, you know, vote for a black candidate. And you may say, well, that's bad, that's racist, blah, 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 blah. But this is just the truth. This is just like a fact that you can't overlook, you know. This is just human nature. People have got a habit of not going for it. The big outlier here, I suppose, is Barack Obama, right? Barack Obama. But 2008, 2012 was a long time ago, and people were a lot more naive back then. We didn't have in the Barack Obama era, you know, a whole like decade of woke bullshit to kind of piss people off and wind people up. Things were in a different place back then. We're in a new place now. And I feel like, you know, I've got good reasons to be on that side of things, of a bet. But we'll see. Maybe they are right, and the British public is just, you know, completely Martin Luther Kingized by this point. Here's Boris Johnson. Congratulations to Kemi on our outstanding victory. She brings a much-needed zing and zap to the Conservative Party. Yeah, zing and zap, Boris, yeah. Zing and zap. There was Cringe Walker. There was this. You see, they always do this move, Tories, right? Diversity obsessed Labour, women leaders 0, Conservatives 4. Diversity, Labour, black ethnic minority leaders 0, Conservatives 2, black women leaders 0, Conservatives, fire, heart, champagne, clap, making history fabulous. It's too good. I guess can't. I mean, you see, the thing is that I made that parody video back in Kemi a couple of weeks back, no matter how silly I could make the parody, the truth is worse, right? The truth is always more absurd than the parody version that I could make of it, right? In fact, so absurd is the actual truth that a number of people watched that second Kemi Badenoch video I made and basically just took it straight. They had no idea whatsoever that I was tongue in cheek. They just took it straight, and this is interesting to me. But again, we're talking about Tory members as opposed to the public at large. What else do we have? Oh yes, Trucker Jenkins making he said, "I'm literally weeping. Look at that. Churchill, Thatcher." To really lay it on, Christopher Hope on GB News has broken a story that the 1922 committee has ri risen the threshold to trigger a vote of no confidence. It has secretly increased from 15 to 33% of the parliamentary party. That means that 40 MPs will be needed to trigger a vote of no confidence in Badenoch. The fix is in. She's locked in, basically. They've changed the rules so she can't be ousted. Oh, it's too good. I can't. It's too good. It's too good. Morgoth there. Oh yeah, so here we are. This was the tweet that really set everybody off. James Cleverly, right? James Cleverly. Pale, male, and stale. Labour really do need to sort themselves out. I mean, it's you can't make this stuff up, right? You can't make it up. Now, if we scroll down, Cleverly is basically trying to mock the left here. He's trying to say, like, oh, the left are the real racists, or all of that bullshit diversity woke stuff you guys were talking. And look, we're the one with the black women leader because we don't play identity politics. That's basically he's doing, you know what he's trying to do, right? He's trying to do a merit is what he's trying to do. So I have seen people trying to use this as an example of wokeism, right? But he's actually trying to mock the woke.
Up yours, woke moralists. We'll see who cancels who.
It's too good. It really is. But if we scroll down, he says, Labour's constant obsession with identity politics doesn't actually translate into action. Conservatives recruit on reward and merit.
Merit, pure merit, such merit, merit, such merit, merit, such merit, merit, such merit, merit, such merit.
But of course, we all know that that is a lie. And I don't know why the Tories keep on telling this lie, because we know that David Cameron picked a lot of diversity candidates deliberately. There was basically affirmative action on the Conservative shortlist. So they don't practice meritocracy. They do pick people based on their race. They just pretend that it's meritocracy, which makes it even worse, really. Lying, horrible Tories. But anyway, when people see stuff like that from Cleverly, when people see all this kind of stuff coming out of the Tory party, they will basically conclude that this is a left-wing party, as people have been ripping up their memberships today, you know. So I really do think that we could be seeing the beginning of the end of the Tories, fingers crossed. They don't make many unforced errors, Tories, in their history. They've usually found a way to pull T-1000 back together, but they keep on making the wrong move. They're making wrong moves, and that makes me happy. All right, so let us now hit some super thanks since the last office hours, and then we'll do some super chats as well. Now, obviously, if you've sent them on Entropy, that doesn't count towards the Google target thing. But if there are 10 super chats, I will then make a video on Fuentes versus Hobbits. If it doesn't reach it, I won't do it. Because, I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm using these goal things now. If I'm kind of iffy on something, if not enough people want to do it, then I'd rather not do it, you know. All right, so from Super Thanks, let's go back to the Tim Pool office hours I did 11 days ago. Okay, 11 days ago. Esoteric Elderman on that last office hours says, will you be returning to the Lotus Eaters for the US election night stream? I'm thinking of getting some friends around and staying up. I literally think of it like a WrestleMania these days, thanks to you and Gio. Yes, is the answer. I will be going to Swindon and I will be on the election night coverage. Quite what I'm going to say, I don't know. I've got basically nothing to say about the US election other than the takes that you guys have heard 1,000 times before. And I don't really want to, debate them with anyone. I just kind of have my views. I will state them and, you know, I don't really want to get into any backs and forth with people who believe in democracy, basically. I just think it's pure kind of calculation between two different rival factions. The only interesting question of the election is, are they going to steal, basically? To which my answer is, I don't think so. I think the regime want Trump. But who knows? The Democrats are freaking crazy. So, you know, in a way, the most interesting outcome would be a steal 2.0. That would be like the most fun, I guess. But I just expect Trump to win, basically. So on kind of in the weeds, you know, polling and, you know, this poll, that poll and all that kind of data stuff, just don't care. All of those numbers may as well not exist in my view, because I just don't even think it comes down to people. I just think it comes down to these two organized minorities at the end of the day and their will to win, their will to power. Why progressives fear the rise of traditionalism? Question from Jada, JDA 1814. Great video, AA. I think the new form of content is better for sharing with friends to help move them past the unheard, who is it for, line. I have recently moved to Edinburgh for a PhD, making the most of my free printing to fill my shelves with the big base book list. I am doing a Carlisle tour soon. I'd hate to think what he'd make of the place now. I reckon Carlisle, if he came back from the dead, would basically just walk around saying, I told you so, told you so, told you so. What did I tell you? Told you so. That's what he'd be doing, Carlisle, because basically all of his predictions came true. Like so many reactionaries in days of yore. What else have we got? Best non-woke books for children, Holy Weather says. I highly recommend The Swallows and Amazon's Books for Kids. There's enough high trust society adventure and responsible risk taking to please even the most discernible height man. I tell you one thing I did buy since that woke books video I did. I bought the complete set of Well Loved Tales Ladybird books, you know, from the 60s and 70s, the original ones. I found a complete set of them and bought them in, and I've been reading them to AAA in the nights. And I'm actually thinking of recording, using AA Mellow, and just recording my versions of them reading those to, you know, because, you know, people like sometimes watch YouTube videos to have like a bedtime story. I think I might just do like all 27 tales, you know, just me reading Little Red Riding Hood and Three Little Pigs and stuff. I've got a vague notion that I would only have like five voices, because I can only do about five accents, right? So I'd have like a villain voice for big bad wolf type characters, which would basically be some variation on my Palpatine or Sly Sneak. I'd have a Welshman, a more Welshy character. I'd have a posh character. I'd have my normal voice, so there's four. And I'd have a high-pitched character for children or women, basically. So, you know, I'd get through all 27 tales with five different voices. So, yeah. Yeah, exactly, a witch character, you know. I've also got my Japanese prison officer accent from when I played the Kralla Home in The King and I. Madame Leon Oi, your finger shines. That's literally how I played it. And my history teacher said, you didn't sound like you were from Siam at all. You sounded like a Japanese prison officer. You were bloody awful, he said. I thought I was quite good personally, but yeah. Madame Leon Oi, we present you firework. I probably wouldn't get away with that performance these days. People would think it was racially insensitive or something, I suppose. But, you know, I was young. What else have we got? Jamal from the Yummy Mummy Cafe. Oh, Jamal. Do you know Jamal from the Yummy Mummy Cafe? Jamal from the Yummy Mummy Cafe lasted one shift. Ruined my visit by existing and being there at all. Ruining the perfect record they've got of employing, you know, fit young women, basically, locals. But yeah, he was just there one day, and I never saw him again. Probably because he was absolutely useless. Anyway, Jamal from the Yummy Mummy Cafe says, so this is on What's Gone Wrong with the Tory Party. That was my video on Tom. Do you remember Tom challenging the stereotypes? Tom the cross-dresser, the who loves Margaret Thatcher. He says, to push back on this slightly, the fact that the elites allow everyone to vote shows the parliament and political parties have no power. As an American vassal state, both Tories and Labour have been made to undergo ritual humiliation. For example, Labour were made to stab their own working class base in the back with the Nationality Act, 1948, and again with the Equal Pay Act, 1970. Tom is just the Tories catching up with a pause. I mean, I'm not sure if anybody forced Clement Attlee and friends to sign the Nationality Act, 1948. I think that they probably believed in those ideals genuinely in 1948, after World War II. That sort of kind of globalist, one world government type thinking was rife back then, as my readings from Major General Richard Hilton have outlined. But again, as Major General Richard Hilton will tell you, yes, there was an organized minority involved in the background back then as well. Whether they, I feel like somebody like Clement Attlee and that government were true believers, though. I really do. Yes. Also on that What's Gone Wrong with the Tory Party video, Helio Seji says, hey, AA, I have a suggestion for the long intro problem. Turn it into an outro. After the get out routine, play the full cinematic in reverse, winding down the video nicely. Well, the thing is, there is a standard outro video where I talk about, you know, buying courses and tell people to get out. My solution to the long intro has been to do the little, there's a little 8-second short intro on all videos, basically shorter than half an hour, 40 minutes. So only really long videos, hour long plus, 45 minute plus type videos, get the full intro these days. That said, there is a contingent of wags, cheeky little rascals, who have been keeping up the tradition of moaning about the intro by saying it is now too short. So, yes. Bambio Georgios, and this is on one of the Hammer Horror videos I made. This is on the how I collected 60 plus Hammer Horror classics in 2 weeks. Says, thanks, AA. I'll tell you, by the way, I made those Hammer Horror videos when I was ill. I got really ill. I was stuck in bed and watched a pile of Hammer films and then started reading about it. And given I knew I couldn't stream this week, rather than have the week off, rather than kind of leave nothing on the channel for the week, I thought the Hammer videos would be better than nothing, basically. And, you know, the main Hammer documentary turned into something of a magnum opus. You know, some people have called it a masterpiece. And I have faith, basically, that in time, that first Hammer video will reach 40, 50,000 views, just like my old Batman one and some of the other kind of, you know, every once in a while I jump down a rabbit hole. And those types of videos grow over time. Most videos have a curve where they get all of their hits in the first day or the first 2 days, and then they kind of drop off a cliff as the algo drops them. Okay, most news cycle videos are like that. Most videos are like that, to be honest. But some videos just grow over time because they're evergreen. And that Hammer one, I would hope, would grow over time. They're basically picking up hits from either people sharing them on Reddit or just searching. Like, so you'd find that video searching for Hammer Horror, basically. Bambos Giorgio says, thanks, I enjoyed the Hammer videos. I watched the entire Universal and Hammer series a few years ago and recently rewatched the Universal and Hammer Dracula, Frankenstein and Mummy movies. Question regarding Hammer creatives. Do you think there's any significance to them having mostly been in the armed forces? They aren't horror fans. They're just ordinary blokes for whom a horror franchise fell into their laps when Universal gave them the go-ahead to use all the classic characters. Too good an opportunity to pass up. Yeah, I do think that there is a lot of crossover, basically, between the Hammer crew and the Carry On crew, who had also, or they were all part of that same generation who'd served in World War II. And if you have a look at their birth dates, it's all stuff like they were born in 1916 or 1914, or some of the older ones would have been born, you know, in the 1900s or even the late 1890s, the very oldest ones. I think Terence Fisher was maybe an 1897 birth date or something like that. Don't quote me on that. So they were basically the generation that had served in World War II. Almost all of them had some sort of military service. And what Hammer has in common with the Carry On guys is this very workmanlike, business-like approach to things. There's this attitude of, we must get it done. Okay, we've got a job to do here, lads, and we're going to do it. There's something I admire in that spirit, basically. The kind of family atmosphere on set, and the everybody pulling in the same way, specialists in their field. Yes, there are limited budgets, but there's just this attitude, basically, of, you know, we're going to do it to the best of our abilities, but we also have to get it out type thing. Yeah, something about that is, I mean, basically it's the opposite. It's the opposite sensibility to the 1970s auteur idea of the individual genius director who's tortured and is going over budget and all this sort of stuff. I suppose somebody like Stanley Kubrick would embody that kind of idea, but this is very different. This is like, yeah, we are gonna get this done, you know. And the director answers to the producer, and the producer, you know, always got his eye on the bottom line, you know. So anyway, let's have a look then at some of the super chats that have come in. I will do the ones on entropy first. Coney says, do you think Russia will experience a population boom after the war? Honestly, I don't know enough about the demographics of Russia to answer that question. So that's my honest answer, Coney. I just don't know. He also says, will more and more British farmers, especially young ones, become interested in our political scene as they get screwed over more and more by the government? This budget being a key example. Possibly, Coney, possibly. I mean, that happened in the Netherlands, didn't it? Do you remember Grotbags? And that party actually ended up in the government, didn't it, eventually? So the farmers, when they get organized, can cause political problems. So let's hope. And let's hope that Clarkson is their champion. Let's hope that Clarkson, being a farmer now, gets involved in that, galvanizes them, you know? William Crook says, great content overall. Did you have a house rule back in the day about looking at other screens in GoldenEye multiplayer? We didn't. Big part of the game, I'd say. I don't remember any such house rule. I don't remember looking at other people's screens. I tell you the one that we played more than GoldenEye was, I think it was a game called Nightfire. Is it called 007 Nightfire? I remember playing that quite a bit in my university days. And I would go and like hide on the lifts and things like that, or hide up in a tower. I was a very kind of sneaky player. And I play those battle royale games in that manner as well. Chris Pimer says, beep, beep, I'm a Jeep. Well, good for you, Chris. Chi Squared says, I have a Normicon friend who promised to read 3 non-fiction books I recommended him. The Abolition of Man was book 1. He's currently reading The Populist Delusion. Do you have a good recommendation for book number 3? Yes. The Prophets of Doom by me, because it directly follows on from Populist Illusion. If you want another one, I did a video a couple of weeks back called 60 Mind-Blowing Based Books or something. Based Books, it was called. Ultimate Red Pill Books 2. If you don't fancy getting Prophets of Doom, you could look through that list. And, you know, there's tons of recommendations there, basically. PS says, Kemi is a boss. She will boss Starmer. Kemi changing the leadership rules. She's already asserting her power. Kemi will bring us to 0 seats. Yeah, I have faith. I have faith. Okay, having a look. Danny Tommy says, watching your vids on X is great. The experience is ruined when you're catching up with them on YouTube due to the constant ad interruptions. Now, a lot of people have been complaining about ads recently, especially on that Hammer video. There was a lot of ad complaints. I basically have no control over that. I set them to, you know, have, I think I've got them on like medium or even low frequency or whatever. YouTube basically has a mind of its own. And sometimes it seems to crank up ads. Sometimes it cranks down ads. So that's really on YouTube. What I think is happening there is they are trying to encourage people to get onto that premium thing. So I think they're spamming people with ads at the moment in a bid to get them to, because I've noticed it when I've been watching other people's stuff as well, more ads than usual recently. I think they're trying to get people onto YouTube premium. And I will say, in fairness to YouTube, if you join premium, content creators still get paid for that if they've got ads switched on. Some percentage comes from premium. I've noticed when I've been looking at what comes in, basically. Mint20 says, nothing, he's just given $5. Tomahawk says, can we have a UO like post-election analysis stream with AA and friends for old time's sake? Well, I mean, it's easier said than done, basically, Tomahawk. For one, I don't have any friends. For two, I'll be traveling back, and then, you know, my schedule. Don't forget, the whole reason for the revamp is that I don't have evenings anymore. So it's much more difficult to get people together. I was going to do a 100K party last night. But again, circumstances being what they are, I had to cancel it because I just didn't have the bandwidth, basically. I didn't have the space to do a 100K party last night. I'm probably just going to do some unboxing thing, probably, if that plaque ever turns up. But I'm just telling the truth. It may be very difficult to get such a panel together, basically. I also get the impression that my old friends don't even bother watching anymore. So, you know, there's that to consider. They're all off doing their own things, you know, doing their own analysis and so on, which if you want to go and watch them, you can. Won't be as good as mine, of course, because I'm number one. O2 Tom says, Farage will miss the wide open goal because he's just a liberal boomer who wants approval from the regime. He simply hasn't got the minerals. A lot of people have been saying that, and I think it's probably true. JS says, thoughts on Richard Spencer coming out for Kamala today? Not very surprising. I mean, he's basically been a Democrat supporter for about 6 years now. I still regularly listen to Richard Spencer's show, you know, and he's got his reasons. The trouble is with Richard is that he is basically motivated by his complete hatred of the conservative movement in America. You know, okay, he came up with all these reasons why he's going to vote for Kamala, Ukraine or something, you know. But basically his real motivation is just his absolute hatred of the conservative movement. It's full of grifters. He doesn't like Zionism, and it's full of Zionists. And I kind of understand, that's why I listen to him, because all of his critiques are basically right. He just then ends up coming up with this weird conclusion where, therefore, I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris, you know. RCW says, do you think people should be wary of offering support to Fuentes? Yeah. I mean, I've gone on record many times to say that I believe that there's something a bit off about Fuentes. I think he bots his likes. I've got spreadsheets where I have evidence that he bots his likes on Twitter. I think he bots his views. I did a spreadsheet analysis of that as well, where I did a comparison between him and many other people. He's a massive outlier on Rumble and many other. I basically went on Rumble, had a look at his sub count to view ratio. Okay. And I looked at the sub count to view ratios of many, many people across YouTube, Odyssey, and Rumble. And Fuentes was a massive outlier. Okay. So, like, if he's got all these dedicated fans, why didn't they just sub to him? Right? There's a very strange disparity there between sub count and ratio that suggests that he bots like crazy. Now, this in and of itself is not an issue, but there are a number of other question marks I have over him too, which I don't want to get into here. Now, I will say that he has independently come to many of the same conclusions that I've come to on various aspects. I think he's based, you know, so every once in a while I see clips of him where I kind of agree with what he's saying. I watch the occasional stream or two. I just get the impression, do you remember I did my slop tiers, slop one, levels 1 to 4, and then I had the slop level 5 with Candy Sowins, Fuentes, Pearl Davis, and Andrew Tate. I believe that there could be some play whereby he exists basically to discredit critics of Israel, right, to make, and I've seen this happen with my own eyes on Twitter, the gripers were so annoying that they made criticism of Israel cringe in some people's eyes, right? And they made, you know, that they were so annoying in their insistent calling people, you know, I mean, I got it. I got it. Oh, you're a Jew and all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's so annoying and it's so tedious that they turned off basically everybody. And it made it easy for certain forces, certain networks to turn that into an advantage for the Zionist side, basically. So I've got this kind of idea that they use these dialectical games to discredit one side. With Candice Owens, it's like she's not using credible, like, it always descends into clown show stuff, right? Stupid, like UFOs and moon landings and bloody just nonsense thrown in with, you know, the occasional criticism of Israel, where it makes it easy to discredit. And I really do believe there's a structural role being played, whether wittingly or unwittingly, by some of these people. Okay. And I find that an irritating tendency for him. So that's my honest view. That said, when I've seen him recently, he's made some points that could have been written word for word by me, right? Not all of these points, obviously. I disagree with what he was saying about hobbits recently. But I think he's got the number on a certain network operating in American politics, from what I can tell. So at least he's switched on. And it seems like, I mean, I don't really keep up with that, with him or with that scene in general, but it seems like he may have ditched some unsavory friends recently as well, which gets the big double thumbs up from me. Jay Anthanias says, Prof, reaction to the murder of Peanut the Squirrel? Well, I saw that Trump tweeted something about that, but I don't know anything about that story. That one has passed me by, I'm afraid. That one has passed me by. Nicotine Enjoyer says, I've started marking uni papers as a TA, and they're bad. Most even lack a thesis. Any advice on how to mark papers, bad papers, without becoming despondent? No. And I absolutely hated marking. It was my least favorite part of the job by a mile. And if I never have to mark another paper in my life, I'll be happy. It was crushing. Crushing. Terrible. I hated marking. I really did. So I've got no, you will become despondent. Lots of coffee, I guess, and give yourself time, basically. Just horrible. Big Chaz says, do you prefer bonfire night to Halloween? Yeah, I think so. I've always liked the idea of going out and actually seeing the bonfire. I went to a really weird one last year in a little village called Cranley, where they did like an actual lighting of this big, you know, there was a guy, and it was almost like a scene from Wicker Man. That was weird. And, you know, I took the little one, and it was a bit scary for her and stuff. But there was like a kind of Wicker Man vibe, which I kind of secretly dug. Yeah, there's something about that. Or, you know, I was transported suddenly as like, this could be the spirit of Cromwell, or this could be the spirit of pagans or something, which interested me greatly. So I would like to see more of those. Unfortunately, this year with the election landing on November the 5th, I don't know if I'm going to go get to see any. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to go to the one with AAA tonight. I'm just checking to see if I'm going to text now. If they're going to go straight there or come back, they're probably going to go straight there. Yeah, I've had no messages. All right. Jay Anthanasius says, Fuentes video, please. I tried to watch a Hammer flick last month. Twins of Evil. Worst movie I've ever seen. So Christopher Lee must have been ashamed. Well, so Christopher Lee was not in Twins of Evil. That was a pick by Proper Horror Show in that top 10. Twins of Evil, though, is belongs to a kind of late Hammer when they started to get a bit more risque in the 70s. So there was a bit more sex in it and things like that. You may want to check out earlier Hammer, some of their gothic masterpieces, rather than jumping straight in for Twins of Evil. Spasticus Autisticus says, what's the highest mark you've ever given a paper? Well, basically, Spasticus, my highest mark ever was 86. So in my mind, I made that the absolute maximum to make sure that nobody would ever beat me. So I never gave higher than 86, I can tell you that. I think 80 probably is the highest mark I ever gave. 80, I think it was. There are some good papers occasionally. Yeah, I think 80, though, would have been the top. And he said, I meant the company that Sir Lee helped to build. The thing is with Sir Christopher Lee, though, he was basically permanently disgruntled. He was such a kind of purity spiraler that he was down on everything. Like, he was just grumpy, basically, Sir Christopher Lee. But in a way, the grumpiness of Lee and the professionalism of Cushing were two of the things that kept that studio serious. You know, there were at least two serious people on set who really took their characters seriously, took the law. I mean, the thing about Christopher Lee is that he takes the law seriously. He took the law of Dracula seriously, took the law of Lord of the Rings seriously later on. When they did the Mummy films, they took the Egyptian stuff. They really did kind of buy in on that kind of level. So I do think that helps those films. By the time you get to Twins of Evil and some of that later stuff, really it's not the Hammer crew anymore. I mean, Peter Cushing was there, but if you have a look on my spreadsheet, it's a bunch of different people. That said, I kind of have more time for Twins of Evil. I think it has some good stuff in there. And it is well liked by certain horror fans. But I tend towards liking slightly earlier Hammer. In fact, I was thinking, do I like the late 50s stuff most or the mid 60s stuff? And I think I lean towards the 66 to 69 type of period. I was looking at my top 10, and most of my favorites are in that little period where they were making films with Warner 7 Arts. The 7 Arts period is my favorite because they were pushing the boat out a bit more. And there's a little, they're kind of changing a bit of the gothic feel. Taste the Blood, Dracula, Revenge of Frankenstein was made in that era. Plague of Zombies, Dracula, Prince of Darkness. A lot of decent films in that mid 60s. Devil Rides Out was made in that period, for example. So I'm kind of big on that era, although ask me on a different day and I may have a different answer for you. And Ian Inkster says, it wasn't even slightly the lizard brain that killed Rishi. Sunak was Cameron 2.0. I believe that Boris Johnson could have beaten Keir Starmer with exactly the same policy platform as Sunak. I believe Johnson could have beaten Starmer just through charisma and campaigning. Sunak won a terrible campaign, but also he had the fact that a lot of people in the back of their minds were thinking, this dude is not British. For right or for wrong, I'm just saying objectively, that would have cost Sunak in many places. and the results speak for themselves, really. Although he did well with the Indian community. Surprise, surprise. But he did. He didn't. It didn't. Sunak, being the Tory leader, didn't get any booms with a non-white vote, apart from the Indian contingency, right? So it didn't win any kind of minority votes. They still voted for Labour, right? It basically lost Tories' votes with white voters, for a fact. So, yeah, I really do believe that, people have unconscious things, unconscious biases, you might say, that dictate their choices. All right. I think that'll do. We did not hit our Fuentes target, so there shall be no Fuentes video on Hobbits, because we only had 7 out of the 10 Super Chats. It did not make it. There'll be a different goal next time. Maybe we'll make it a different time, but I didn't make it today. And I will catch you when I can. Basically, I'll catch you when I can later in the week. Normal streams won't be on this week due to the election, but I will try to do a catch-up stream, possibly even covering the fallout for the election late next week, maybe Friday, or again on Saturday, depending on how things pan out. I don't know exactly when I'll be able to do that, but that is my plan. So there'll be at least one stream next week. And then the following week, hopefully, we'll have BAU, business as usual. Jay Anathas says, Fuentes vid. Yeah, but it's still only 8 out of 10, mate. So it still hasn't made it, unfortunately. Thanks for the super chat, but it hasn't made it. All right, bye everyone. Maybe we'll hit the goal next time, and it'll be a different video. What I'll do is, on the goals, I'll put on videos I don't really want to make, and then use the fact it didn't make the goal as an excuse not to make them. All right, bye. Of course, have a nice day. Bye bye.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.